Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome to another edition of Money Matters, your economic forum right here on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me today. And before we begin, please remember discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station's staff members or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money is matter, and matters of money affects us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, whether you have a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way you and I live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about lives and livelihood. In short, money matters. It's about you. That's why we do the show. It's about you. You are the you in community, right? So, opening up the show, checking yahoofinance.com for market indicators. And we always start every show explaining what support and resistance levels are. We are at 25,308 on the Dow 30, which encompasses 30 stocks only. Also, other markets are S&P 500 and NASDAQ, but most people don't see those on TV too much. Usually the Dow is what, you know, main news channels cover. So the Dow is at 25,308, which means 25,000 is below us and 26,000 is above us. So technical analysts who look at technical things, you know, kind of look at numbers. Technical analysts would look at 25,308 and they might say that 25,000 under us, right? We're 25,308, so 25,000 is a number that's under us. Those big numbers, 25,000, 24,000, under us are support levels. So if the Dow was to fall, it might hit 25,000, and they look at those as support levels. It could stop here. The numbers above us, if we were 25,308, and a big number might be 26,000, right? That might be what we call a resistance level. Sometimes they have a little hard time punching through those bigger numbers. Now, there are also minor support levels and minor resistance levels that technical analysts look at. And you know, they all don't agree. So, but normally, you know, the general consensus is these big numbers are support and resistance levels. So, we will see what goes on. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, Apple hit the $1 trillion valuation mark, which means that the stock multiplied by how many shares of stock are outstanding is over a trillion. So, there you go. Largest company in the planet. So Yahoo Finance had an article about that. And so there we go. So thanks for joining me. My name is Mark Cuniberti, and it's the economic show Money Matters. Been on the air since 2005. Our website, where everything is free, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, a free website, has all the shows on there and some newsletters that I put out, is moneymanagementradio.com. If you'd like to send the program director at your station comments, questions about the show, you can do so by going to the website. And we are calling show. So my number is 530-265-9555. 530-265-9555. 530-265-9555. And you can call in and ask me questions. Of course, if you're listening to a show at a different time, because this show is broadcast at other times on other stations, and you can't call in live. Right now, it is 12:14 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Thursday, October 2nd, 2018. And so, okay, this is show 273, called Tariffs, Trump, and Markets. You know, this, the summer times in general are thought to be slow in the market. Slow. And the belief is that the traders, the guys who really move the markets, go off and take vacation, right? I mean, I have a couple of different businesses, and one of my businesses is a little slow in the summertime, and people just go off and take vacation. Early in the spring, and mid-spring, and as approved by the regulators in a previous show, I had mentioned that I did not think that this summer was going to be slow. We were long the market, and that was approved for me to say, and so we just reiterating what we said on a previous show. We were long the market, and it has not been slow. Given the high of the Dow was 26,616, and it is 25,311, and it corrected about 10% in its worst case in the beginning, mid-beginning of this year, down to 23-something. So 25,311, it has 1,300 points to go, 1,305 points to go before it tops out of its all-time high, which is 26,616. So we'll see if it gets there. Apple, like I said, Apple just became the first $1 trillion U.S. company. And there are other things, news on yahoofinance.com, but I'm not going to cover all those. So, anyway, there is something out on Associated Press I thought was interesting. Auditors, 30 million taxpayers will owe more due to low withholding. So, in other words, when you withhold money and it goes into your paycheck, the IRS doesn't get it right away. And so the article out today is that you may owe more money to the IRS next year, and they will go on to say more than 30 million taxpayers could owe money to the government next year, thanks in part to the new tax law. Taxes for more than a fifth of Americans, 21%, so says the article, could be underwithheld, meaning that their employer hasn't taken enough money out of their paychecks to cover taxes, according to a Government Accountability Office report based on a simulation run by the Treasury Department. So there you go. When employees' taxes are underwithheld, they owe more money at tax time. Had there been no change in the tax law, 18% would have been underwithheld. So that's 3 million fewer people. So they're saying that because of the tax law, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, that people are going to underwithheld. Not quite sure how that... I'm not quite sure how that applies. Because if we're withholding less... I guess what happened is people thought they were going to pay less, so they withheld less, and they're actually going to owe a little bit more. So anyway, go figure that one out. Okay, other news out today. You know, this, we're right in the middle of earnings season, so a lot of companies are posting, and we've had some surprise on the upside, surprise on the downside. We saw banks post rather kind of okay earnings, and some other companies. And I saw Tesla Motors was up pretty good today. Again, this is not a recommendation to buy or sell securities. It's just notating what is happening. Okay. Is the market climbing? Is the market climbing a wall of worry? You know, they say that markets climb a wall of worry. What does that mean? It means that when everybody thinks the market's going to go up, then the thought would be that the market's done because everybody is in and there's nobody left to get in. But when we see investors, news media is a little worried that the market could drop, that means there's some interpretation in the market, and that's what is meant by the old saying, the market climbs a wall of worry. Markets go up when people worry about the markets going up or going down, and that when everybody is in and nobody worries about it, that's the time, so say the momentum people, that is the time to be careful. So... and Yeah, and then we saw other stocks, FireEye, the internet stock, that fell. Other news. Oh, there's one news I wanted to bring up, but I own that particular security, so I can't mention it. Okay. So the, and yeah. So anyway, Yahoo Finance, great place to, in my opinion, is a great place to check it out and see what's going on. Okay. So you are listening to Money Manager Economic Forum right here. And we don't always cover, we don't always cover money in this show. We cover other things. You know, my radio show and my news articles span the world of investing and all things money. But as you longtime listeners know, I also cover our community and beyond in things not money. And it's kind of a version we've called, instead of Money Matters, we call it Investing in Community. It's a series of shows and news and articles and little promo films that we make that basically detail nonprofits, elections, events happening around the county, like the Celtic Fair, the KVMR Celtic Fair is coming up, and other fairs. The World Fest Fair was held here in this county a little while ago. So I often veer off of money and into more of promoting community and a community, promoting community events and even local companies, trying to get people to live sustainably and purchase locally. So often asked why I veer off of money into more of promoting community, I do it because I'm a firm believer of, if you have a strong community around you, it will strengthen your pocketbook, my opinion, because that's where you live, right? Also because we get a lot of positive response when we cover the community. And so, and a lot of the community things I cover are applicable no matter what community you live in. Let's say if we cover Big Brothers or you know, a homeless shelter, then wherever community you're hearing the show on, you have one there too. And so it's applicable to everything. Fostering a healthy body and a healthy mind, and maybe a healthy garden or rebuilding your car, all those things invest in what you do and what you have. And they make things more efficient or better, and that can improve your finances. Like I mentioned, improving your garden or your house add to its value. Investing in better schools helps the young. And when we help promote private businesses around here, we foster awareness of the businesses in the local community, which may help those businesses generate more revenue, which may in turn put more money back into the local economy. After all, where you live encompasses of the surroundings where you will spend most of your time in, right? Whatever county you're in. If we cover things in the county, or people cover things in your county, that's where you're going to spend most of your time. So the thinking would be it would better improve your quality of life as it helps your friends and neighbors and their businesses and their events and elections and all the things we cover. Promoting nonprofits helps those organizations not only raise funds, but they might bring clientele in that may need the assistance that they offer, or at least not know where that assistance is available. So it helps the clientele, it helps the organization. And needless to say, at least for me, when I help nonprofits and organizations, I feel a lot better about myself. Indeed, many of the nonprofits that we have profiled, whether on the show or in the films or articles, I didn't know existed. You know, and I'm pretty well entrenched in the community. I got a lot of tentacles out. You know, I didn't know that there was a New Day that helps people with mental challenges, and there was a Pets in Need, which helps people, homeless people, feed their pets. I didn't know any of that was out there. It's just amazing. And so they come to us and they say, "Hey, will you cover us?" And we say, "Sure." Also, the nonprofits is where I happen to meet the most interesting, caring individuals, because these people are usually not paid a lot of money, and some of them are volunteering their time. So it's really amazing when I go to the community and I find these people spending hours of their precious time helping other people for little or no compensation. So it's really a way to merely meet cool people. Really, what better way to make my day brighter than to be exposed to people like that and the programs that they manage? So it's really enlightening. If I'm ever feeling down, I just go out and do a piece on a nonprofit. Detailing upcoming and ongoing events, you know, the fairs and musical fairs and the shopping events that the cities hold and all that, you know, and we detail these ongoing events, it lets, you know, interesting parties know what's going on. You know, they may have heard of summer nights in Grass Valley, but they don't know what's going on. Or maybe they live far away and they want to keep connected to the community where they used to live or where they're planning to live. So when we detail these things, normally we detail them in an article or a film, but we also put them on live if I'm down there for KVMR or for, you know, for whatever I'm down there for, we'll put them on live and they can see, hey, well, that's what it's about. And some people are stuck at home. And so when we air a film about, you know, what's going on or an event, you know, they get to be there. And I get to be there on a grassroots level. This is, these are not nationally produced films. These are like, hey, this is where we are. And this is Bob, and that's John. So when we detail events, we bring the event to you. We help the people putting on the events because more people come. And we help people that might come to an event find out what's going on in the event. And like I said, for some people who can't get out of their home or maybe who are sick or whatever, they can have a virtual video or audio tour in the comfort of their own home and even their car. Don't watch video driving, of course. We detail politicians and elections within the confines of regulations. There are many regulations when we do that on a community radio or something like that. There are regulations on how we have to do it and who we have to bring on. And so there are more regulations, but we do it. And we bring current issues to light on a mass scale. You know, if I do a radio show and it's covered all over, these issues are brought to a lot of people at one time. We make people more aware of what is transpiring around them, and that can affect your lives. The regulations or the laws or the people we put in place there. Also, talking to people that are less fortunate than us, than you, than me, or who may be facing challenging issues is enlightening, at least to me. I mean, I talk to these people and I get to see their point of view, the struggles that they're having, and then I put it out on the airwaves, or I put it out on social media, or I put it out in an article, and it helps bring empathy and understanding to those that might not be as compassionate, or they just didn't realize that these problems were out there. And so it brings empathy, it brings sympathy, it brings help. The people that we detail or profile have encouragement that their story is going to be told, and the people out there that might not be out on the street where the homeless people are get to see firsthand what it's like with a guy with a camera or a woman with a camera right there, or an article where we take photographs. You know, nothing moves a person more, in my opinion, than to illustrate the plight of others and do so in a way where it makes it real. You know, it's a real video or a real article, or we bring the people here on the radio so you can hear them, hear their inflections and hear the cadence of the way they speak, and here's what makes them emotional. The various forms that I, myself, have at my disposal, be it radio, print, personal presentation, where I make a speech or whatever, or video, each have their advantages, and sometimes it's challenging for me to decide which media is the best to paint the picture that I envision for the most effectiveness. In other words, what's best for a World Fest, or what's best for Big Brothers and Big Sisters, or what's best for a homeless shelter? Is it radio? Is it video? Is it article? Is it presentation? Indeed, there are many benefits which are presented that help someone somewhere. And that is the power and a reason for the media that we do. To disseminate that which may not have been disseminated. To illustrate that which may need illustrating. And to bring empathy, sympathy, if I dare say, and motivation to those that need that. And those that can help answer those needs. We kind of match the two together. The greatest gift to me, however, when I do these things is one I didn't expect when I started all this. You know, when I started doing investing in community on the radio years and years ago, I was able to make a difference. And to me, that was the greatest gift of all. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back. And are we?
Pretty rocks on my fingers, pretty bad.
And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. I'm going to rip off into the song there, but I had a little bit of a CD problem, so I'm not too concerned about it. So thanks for joining me. You are tuned to your community radio station on your community radio station on Money Matters, your community economic forum. My name is Mark Cunabrudi on the second, first, and third Thursdays, usually, of every month. Summertime, I'm usually running around, so I do take some little bit of time off, and I'll be off a couple of weeks. I'm going to have to re-inform the program director. I will not be here in 2 weeks, so there you go. And so, yeah, summertime, we are not seeing summer doldrums in the market. They are moving pretty good, although kind of directionless, you know. And so, you know, I guess the biggest comments I get, the biggest concerns is Washington, you know, who's occupying the White House. And, you know, I get all sorts of, you know, this has been a very controversial president as far as an advisor is concerned. I've had people pull out. And others put more in. So it is interesting. I've never had so many comments about a president affecting how people invest than this president. And so, you know, I did a show or an article about, you know, he can only do so much because of the amount of checks and balances. So I know everybody's was really worried about all the things that he was going to destroy the market. But you realize there are a lot of checks and balances here. So I wasn't really too concerned that he could destroy the world, at least in the markets economically. So I tell people to relax. You know, I can admit that I was surprised in November of 16. I really was. And when the board turned Trump, I was very surprised. I didn't believe it. And at that time, and as previously said, we were negative in the market. We didn't know what the market was going to do, so I was kind of negative in the market. And the next morning, the market screamed upward. And we turned positive that day, and we said so on the show and wrote it in the articles, and the regulars said I could say that, so we did. And we're still positive. That just means, as far as money's concerned, you know, that I believe in a market direction. And opinion-wise, it will continue. Is that a good thing? I don't know. But I will tell you the caveat is that nobody can predict market direction at any time. It's my opinion. And no one can tell which way the markets will go, which allows me to say the opinion. But you can't tell. So one of the things that we have seen in some of the articles that we have written is that commodities are moving. You know, commodities have started to move. And, you know, I've been calling for inflation for a long time, and it was early. Never saw it. However, they are, you know, moving. And there are certain areas, you know, I took my son to UC Irvine to go on the orientation to UC Irvine. And when I went to school, I went on a, I think it was a semester program, I don't remember, but it was, I took 16 units. I think I needed 160 to graduate, if I remember right. And 16 units from a state school was $180, if my memory serves me right. $180 per semester. So it's 300 and whatever that is, $360 for the year. Well, I can tell you, there's not even close to what I'm going to pay at a UC for my son. And if he was going to private school, off the charts. I think NYU or Stanford, $60,000 to $70,000 per year. Ouch. So I did cover some articles and some radio about considerable price increases in certain areas. Some common areas where price increases are considerable, rampant, and ongoing are what? Healthcare and college education costs. About a decade ago, you could add home prices to that list, right? They were going crazy. The cost of all three, healthcare, College education and home prices at some point seemed like a rocket ride to the moon. There's a very good reason for these exploding costs over the last few decades in these three areas, and it has to do with the basic economic principle, what I call asset-specific monetary inflation. That's my name for it. Asset-specific monetary inflation. Now, what's that mean? Well, I will give you an example of asset-specific monetary inflation. Suppose I put 30 people in a locked room, 30 people, and I lock you in with me, and I give you each $100. Then I bring out a $3,000 Rolex watch, and I offer to sell it to the highest bidder. But the rules are you cannot combine your money with someone else's. So if I gave everybody 100 and only 100, what would be the highest bid price for the Rolex if they adhered to the law that they could not combine the 100? The highest bid would be what? $100, right? Because that's all anybody had in the room. Then I stop the bidding without awarding the watch, and I give everyone $1,000 more in the room. I said, no, I'm not going to sell the watch yet. Everybody, here's $1,000. Now, from the previous high bid of $100, now comes more bids, which obviously go much higher. Understanding what happened is fairly easy. There's more money in the room, and therefore the price is driven higher. As long as the value of the thing I have is higher still, then the bids will continue to go higher. Now, let's draw it out to healthcare, education, and housing. All three areas have been fed copious amounts of money over the past few decades from where? Well, the government. Okay, the government has unlimited funds. They can print till the cows come home. In the case of college educations, the government has made available billions in student loans, which have flooded the market for college degrees with both people and money. So you have increased demand for more people able to go, coupled with billions in government money thrown at college educations, and you have your reason education costs have skyrocketed. In the room where education was for sale, the government came in with billions. In our second example, healthcare, and the advent of health insurance originally, and then the instigation or the implementation of Obamacare or the American Affordable Health Care Act, another fire hose of monies have been aimed directly at the healthcare industry now. In both cases, the amount of money going into the sector, let's say healthcare now, is enough to make that sector as big as a small country as far as how much money's going into it. The results of massive monies flowing into a specific sector is, like the Rolex room, rising prices. And the more money thrown in the direction, the higher prices will continue to go. It reaches a point where without government assistance or insurance help, the average person can no longer afford the services on their own, which means now you have no choice. The monetary model affirms the outcome, and the outcome confirms the monetary model. Throw more cash at something, and its price skyrockets. And if you have an unlimited gun of cash, like the government does, the price is going to go really high, with where people without that gun, or most people, can't afford it at all. So then they call for insurance because basically they've been priced out of the market. The same held true for housing. It kind of still does. In housing, the government mandated everyone should be able to afford the American dream of home ownership and directed the banks to comply through redlining practices, forced lending standards. You loan people that can't afford a loan, or the lending standards are very minimal. Ultra-low interest rates, which makes more people able to get a home loan. And oodles of program to then help people buy or keep their homes. More government money going into a sector The result was a home market that blew a bubble so large when it popped it almost brought down the entire global economy. Still a non-believer, so I made up a program here, all right? This is a program, and I want you to just kind of imagine how this works. Suppose the United States government started a food insurance program. Everybody pays a flat fee. The flat fee is the premium for the insurance, like health insurance or housing or whatever, okay? You pay a flat fee. And in exchange for the flat monthly payment, we will no longer have hunger because you can now buy all the food you want. Okay. Everybody can buy all the food they want. The results would be what we see in healthcare and college. One, consumers would no longer look at food prices, right? Because you don't have to worry about it anymore. Your insurance will cover it. Just like you no longer look at the price for an MRI. You don't ask because insurance covers it. Stores, grocery stores, being fully aware the consumer will no longer ask about price, can then jack up prices, right? As price is no longer a consideration. We don't have to worry about price because insurance is going to pay for it. Demand, in turn, would also skyrocket. As no longer constrained by price, consumers would buy a lot more food and very expensive food. As food prices rise and continue to rise because of the higher demand coupled with the higher prices, costs billed to the insurance companies would also skyrocket. Faced with higher costs, the food insurers would have to raise the price of their premiums. See where I'm going with this? Sound familiar, like healthcare? Yeah. And a vicious cycle ensues where the insurance prices climb higher and higher as the cost of everything climbs higher that's covered on the insurance. The result is the food business is now mirroring the healthcare, education, and housing market, where prices and premiums skyrocket relentlessly upward. This is a monetary sickness called by what I deem asset-specific monetary inflation. We apply a massive amount of monetary stimulus, money, into a specific asset or area, food, or inflation or housing. Simply put, where the government throws money, simply because the amount they can throw, skyrocketing prices are sure to follow. Add in the existence of insurance programs, and the same thing occurs. The bottom line is, where copious amounts of money go, copious amounts of inflation are sure to follow. Add to the problem that the majority of people do not understand this cause and effect, so they call for more insurance, more government assistance, more government loans, and higher prices go. Both people and most politicians don't realize the result of all this will be even higher prices. Higher prices. And isn't that what you see? Housing, healthcare, college. My gosh, my kids' college education cost me a fortune. Round and round. And higher we go. Such is the unfortunate truth of the social experiment called government assistance and insurance. It's kind of a hamster race. And it's kind of hard to get out of. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back.
Come on.
And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me today. I hope everybody's having a good time. How is everybody doing? So, yeah, we have to cover tariffs because that seems to be rocking and rolling the market, all these reoccurring tariffs. And we've covered this before, but I thought it was important that we cover it again because, you know, the tariffs are this big thing. So I want you to kind of listen up, because this is important that we understand what tariffs are and what they do. Because what they do is fairly predictable, at least from an economic standpoint. Okay? The common belief, not everyone believes this, but the common belief is you, when you add a tariff, you cause inflation. That's the common belief. Now, what is a tariff? A tariff is the Chinese are going to sell steel into America. And the original call of duty was that the Chinese were dumping steel. Okay? They figured that the Chinese government was helping the steel companies over there, so they were dumping steel unfairly, whatever that means, onto this market. So this steel companies here saying we can't compete. For a variety of reasons, Chinese workers work a lot for, you know, work a lot less. So the media has been rife about the Trump steel tariffs, and the opinions on these tariffs run the gamut from full support to outright stern objection. The argument is not so much about whether our steel companies need protection here, as the argument was that China was playing unfairly in the arena of free trade. Although most of the media coverage is centered around the specifics of the industry in question, which is steel, and now it's broadened out on a much larger scope, the microscope of analysis should be explaining and detailing how tariffs are thought to work and whether tariffs in general are useful. And are they efficient in helping domestic steel companies and any other companies that tariffs are put on. Simply put, a tariff is an additional tax placed on Chinese steel. Chinese steel comes in, the government says you got to pay us 20%. So the price of domestic steel is not reduced, the price of imported steel is increased. The obvious reasoning is that by making an import more expensive through tariffs, it would make American steel more attractive by comparison. So our domestic steel industry would benefit. The first question I would ask is, wouldn't a tax credit offered to our steel companies serve the same purpose? Instead of adding a tariff onto Chinese steel, we go to our companies and say, we'll give you a credit. You don't owe us as much tax. Think of it this way. By installing tariffs on imported steel, the price of domestic steel does not drop. Imported steel gets more expensive. Therefore, the cost of savings to the industries and the people that use steel would not be reduced, because American steel would not drop one penny. The steel companies that consume steel, the companies that consume steel, auto and canning people, would see no savings. Meanwhile, the tariff money goes where? Into the coffers of those that initiated the tax. In other words, when you put a tariff on it, the money goes to the government. Okay, so they get the money. So you as a consumer save nothing. The tariff goes to the government into their coffers. I've always made the argument that if you gave somebody a tax credit, steel companies here a tax credit, they could lower the price of steel, and therefore the price of automobiles and cans would subsequently go lower to you, the consumer. I've always made the argument that if the governing authorities want to help the bulk of the economy, which is the consumer, a tax credit would serve the same purpose of giving an advantage of domestic steel companies, but the savings would be passed on to you, who's the biggest part of the economy, as the consumer. The difference is by allowing domestic steel companies to take a tax credit, they could offer their steel at lower prices. So cans and cars would cost less, because it would cause lower steel prices to those that make the products that use the stuff. This would result in a general price reduction in all products that use steel, or all products that are tariffed, and that would be more money in the pockets of American consumers to spend on things in the economy. Conversely, when a tariff is used, there is no price reduction in the end product, which means the consumer saves nothing. The money, which is the tariff, goes into government coffers. And that should be the end of the story, but it's not. What's generally believed is because Chinese steel then costs more, the American companies could raise the price of their steel, which causes an overall price increase across the board. So tariffs meant to protect a particular steel company or whatever company that the tariff is aimed at, whatever industry, causes widespread price increases in that industry eventually, which causes inflation. One could argue the government would use the additional tariff monies they get to spend on whatever it spends its money on. But the consumer is the driving force of the economy. Putting that money into the hands of the everyday Joe would not only help a struggling constituency meet their bills, but it would get into the economy that much quicker. It is believed by some, this analyst included, that money in the hands of the consumer is much more wisely spent with less waste than putting the money into an already bloated bureaucracy known as Uncle Sam. In each specific case a tariff is implemented, the subsequently higher priced import does make the domestic product more attractive by comparison. But besides stuffing government coffers, the consumer sees no benefit. And in fact, it seems to get everybody else mad, doesn't it? You know, Canada's mad at us, and China's mad at us, and, you know, because we put tariffs on their stuff. So you think they'd be mad if we just said, we're not going to touch the price of your stuff. We're just going to give our companies a credit. How can anybody get mad at you for that? Right? So immediately, there's no tit for tat. You know, China says, well, you're going to put a tariff? No, we're not going to. We're going to just give a tax credit to U.S. Steel because they're good people or whatever. So the additional benefit, at least in my opinion, is I don't think everybody else would get mad at us. And they start doing it too. So we get this war of tariffs now going back and forth. Now, you could have a war of tax credits going back and forth, but then the price of overall goods in the whole world would drop. That'd be even better. The secret is the tariffs go to the government. Tax credit, the money savings, goes to you. That the powers would be always telling how they want to help us. They want to help the consumer. He's spending too much. He needs help. Stop sending us $600 stimulus checks and give tax credits to our companies instead of tariffs, and prices would drop. It's a common belief that tariffs cause inflation, so tax credits cause deflation. And that's what we need. At least that's what I need in my family. I need things to go down in price. With tariffs, the money goes into the hands of Washington instead of the hands of the American consumer. That's a larger issue, and I don't see anybody covering it. Nobody's talking about it. It's kind of weird. Like before the housing blow up, nobody was talking about it. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Are tuned to your community radio station. This is Money Matters, your economic forum, entitled Show 273, Tariffs, Trumps, and Markets. Okay, so it's been a pleasure speaking to all of you today. Our website, Agrata, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, is moneymanagementradio.com. How easy is that? Everything is free. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff, members, or underwriters. So, your community radio stations, you can go to your websites and check out what's coming up on your station. And, of course, offer your support, kudos, and make comments on things going on in your community. Stay tuned for more fine programming. We'll let the music run out. My name is Mark Cunaberti. You have been listening to show 273 of Money Matters, entitled, once again, Tariffs, Trump, and the Markets. And I'll be back probably in a month. God bless. Have a great day.